WRIF HD2 Detroit.
Comic books, video games, anime, sci-fi. If you've been made fun of for it, we're probably going to talk about it.
Get those nerds!
Nerds! Nerds!
You're listening to Nerd Radio on Rift 2.
We're back with Nerd Radio here on Rift 2. Jefferson Moore and Chuck B in studio with you every Wednesday night about 10 o'clock, talking some music, or playing some music and talking some nerds. Sometimes we talk some music and play some nerd. You can never tell. It's a mixed bag when you come here on Wednesday nights.
It's true.
But we were just talking off the air.
It's like a box of chocolates.
You never know what you're going to get. And one of the things that we really love here at Nerd Radio is robots, especially robots that punch other robots. And when you're talking about robots that punch other robots, you got to talk about the official movie of Rock'em Sock'em Robots. That would be Real Steel with Hugh Jackman. That's a little known fact. That is technically Rock'em Sock'em Robots the movie.
Yeah, I think that was actually the working title for the first movie.
Right.
Like the first draft of it was like Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Right. And it went way better than the Battleship movie, I got to say.
Yeah.
I want to see Sorry the movie.
Yeah.
I want to see how that works.
Or like Trouble or something.
Yeah. Like, is there going to be a big bubble with a giant dice in it that you pop and go clack.
Well, if you think about it, Battleship wasn't much like that, was it?
No, Battleship was almost like another G.I. Joe movie.
Yeah.
They just happened to have aliens in it.
But, you know, Rock'em Sock'em Robots is basically Real Steel.
Yeah.
You got two robots.
You got Hugh Jackman, who used to be a boxer, the basic premise of this movie. He used to be a boxer, and then when they started putting robots in the ring to box each other because they wouldn't let people box robots. Which really, I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
People boxing robots.
For sure.
He started training the robots to box. They've got AI and they learn the moves and stuff like that. So he picks up he pieces together this robot and he gets it to box. And it's like Rocky with boxing robots.
With a big old robot, yeah.
Right.
This is kind of cool. Things are like 9 feet tall and...
Yeah, and they're all Pacific Rim, like there's certain international type of robots. Like there, I think there was a China robot and a Russian robot or something like that.
Japanese one in the beginning.
Yeah, and it was yet another movie that we were privileged enough here in the Michigan area to have quite a bit of it filmed here. It was in I believe it was in Mason, Michigan. I know somebody. Her name is Jan. She's not listening, so I'm not going to say hi. Hi, Jan. I'm joking. But yeah, she actually grew up in Mason, Michigan. So like when I saw the movie, I saw it with her and she was like, that's my town. That's where I grew up. That's my town.
Nice.
I'm like, that's cool. And then we, you know, went back to her town because it's like an hour from the station here, an hour up north. I think it's near Pontiac, I think.
Isn't exactly a new movie.
No, it's been out for, geez, like maybe 4 or 5 years. Like, I think you can even catch it on FX now or Sci-Fi Channel, which is kind of cool. But it is a really cool movie.
The main reason I wanted to talk about it is because I'm not a big wrestling fan, but you are.
I'm a huge wrestling fan.
But I'm a really big movie fan, and this is kind of the slight overlap that you got between those two realms.
It's a little bit, I mean, it's more boxing than wrestling, but you got robots. Robots fighting each other. I was saying when you first said you want to talk about this movie, the one thing that struck me really odd about this movie is there used to be a time when you had a movie or a television show or anything, any type of media, it was almost an unsaid rule that you got a game. You got a video game of some sort. And I was surprised this movie and as we talked about Pacific Rim a couple minutes ago too, I'm surprised with both of those movies that there was not a kick-ass game related to, like, there was a Real Steel game, but it was on, like, Xbox Live.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, it didn't quite live up to it. And it's really strange to me, thinking back, growing up with the phenomenon of, like, wow, I really like this TV show, I'm gonna go play the game. Wow, I really love this movie, I'm gonna go play the game. Like, the Avengers movie is another one that, like, there wasn't a game. There wasn't a video game that you could go and buy in the store and then play to go along with the movie. And there's probably not going to be an Age of Ultron game either to go along with it. And it seems really weird to me because there was a period when the original Xbox and the PlayStation 2 were out. We were still in the midst of like there was a Constantine game, Keanu Reeves Constantine. Ooh. It wasn't bad. Huh. It was kind of a cool game. When the last time they did a Punisher movie, there was a game to go with it. And it was amazing. It was like Max Payne, but you were the Punisher.
It seems to me, though, like, this is just my experience, though, that whenever there's a movie, well, whenever there's a game that's patterned after a movie, it normally just doesn't...
Oh, yeah. No, trust me, it's the rule is usually that it's crap.
Yeah.
It's the exceptions that are, like, that's super true. Amazing. You might be too young to remember this. Grandpa's going to get in his rocking chair here and tell you a story here.
Okay.
The original Nintendo Entertainment System. I don't know how old you were when like that was a big deal, but...
When was that?
The original Nintendo Entertainment System.
When did that come out?
88, 89,
yeah. 86-ish. I got some bad news for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So anyways, the original Nintendo System, there was a third party known as LJN Games. LJN used to make a bunch of toys, but they made games too. And they were notorious for snapping up franchises and then making games that had absolutely nothing to do with the franchise. They are...
slapped on the name.
They are best known for a series of Back to the Future games that are some of the worst games on the Nintendo Entertainment System. An X-Men game that is also one of the worst games on the Nintendo Entertainment System. Yeah, they made terrible, terrible games. They made a Friday the 13th game. Really bad. Really bad. But there were other... when the original Batman movie, the 1989 Michael Keaton Batman movie came out, another company, Sunsoft, made a game. Didn't quite base it off the movie. It was a little bit comics. It was more comics than movie. Fantastic, though. Fantastic. And you know, you do get that sometimes. Like I said, there was a Punisher game that was great, a Constantine game that was fantastic. There's a if I'm missing any out there in Radio Land and you're listening to us now, tweet us or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/Rift2Nerds. @Rift2Nerds on Twitter as well. Let me know if I'm missing any, if there's any that, you know, I'm not thinking of right off the top of my head. But yeah, there was a period where you could get a game with a movie, and Real Steel was one of those movies that I was just like, why isn't there a kick-ass game? I can't believe, especially after I saw Pacific Rim, like, how is there not how is there not like an XCOM game?
I mean, you got your Kaiju, you got your Jaegers.
Yeah, like you'd have to like resource manage the Jaegers and repairing them, and then like building walls or like, you know, defenses to keep the Kaiju at bay so you could get the Jaegers out there to beat on them. Like, it feels like it just writes itself.
Yeah.
And then it didn't happen. I don't know. But still, awesome movies. And Real Steel, definitely.
Recommend it for sure.
Give it a thumbs up. Real Steel is pretty cool. Not a bad Hugh Jackman movie either.
No, yeah. Oh, did you hear that? This just like hit social media fairly recently.
Uh huh.
He's doing his last Wolverine sort of film.
Oh, the next X-Men is his last Wolverine.
Yep. Did you hear that, Bob?
I had not heard that. I'm not heartbroken.
Yeah.
I'm a little.
He was like the main character of the X-Men. Like, I think we've talked about this on air. Where?
Yeah, like, I think the last time we had Andrew in here, we were talking about the fact that like we're. What, 6 or 7 X-Men movies deep, and they're always Wolverine in the X-Men, and like, he's obviously the breakout character of the X-Men since the 70s, but it's a big franchise, man. There's like 50-something characters.
Yeah,
I've talked to my comic book friends about the fact that it was about 6 or 7 years ago, they took the Amazing... At one point, Spider-Man had like 6 titles across the Marvel line. There's like Amazing Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Peter Parker Spider-Man. There's like a bunch of titles. Like, but you were getting, basically there was a Spider-Man book every week. So what they did is they took the line and they annihilated every book except Amazing Spider-Man, and then just made it weekly. It just came out like, well, not weekly, but it came out like 3 times a month. And I always thought, like, why don't we do that with X-Men?
Yeah.
Instead of having like 7 X-Men books with different writers and everybody's doing different things and stuff like that. There's like 50 plus characters in the X-Men franchise. Like, just make it a weekly book and like let a writer write a month's worth of stuff and pick and choose what characters he wants. And then like, if Rogue's not in this month's story, maybe it should be in next month's story. If you're a big Rogue fan, if Gambit's not in this story, maybe it'll be in the next one, you know? Or if you hate particular characters, man, I can't stand Northstar. Well, you know, wait until the next story starts. He probably won't be in that one kind of thing. I don't know why they've done that. That's interesting though.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
No Hugh Jackman. Well, and, the guy who plays, Captain America, has said that like when he's done with these Marvel movies, he is done. Chris Evans.
That's the one.
Yes. You were looking around kind of going like, I can't think of his name, and I'm just talking to buffer my brain firing up to Chris Evans.
Which no, I'd be the one like
on normally you're spot, my other but... the other half of my brain to tell me these things. But it's nice to see some role reversal here. So
Next time.
Anything else you want to talk say about Real Steel?
Good movie. Child actors are child actors, though. So, I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, true. He wasn't bad for as far as that
no,
was.
No, he certainly wasn't Will Smith's kid. That's for sure.
Yeah. The static white kid.
Yeah.
Loving boxing and everything.
We talked, we talked previously about some of the worst movies we've ever seen, mm-hmm. and I couldn't come up with anything like yeah. off
and
the top of my head.
Of them.
As soon as I mentioned Will Smith's kid, Day of the Earth Stood Still. That movie was
nope.
damn terrible.
Which one is that?
Keanu Reeves was an alien.
Oh, yeah.
And he was trying...
Was Jane Smith in that one?
Yes, he was. It was one of his first roles as a stupid little kid, and like everybody in that movie was terrible. Everybody. Yeah, avoid it at all costs.
Avoid it like the plague.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like your old man voice. Your old
yeah,
man
right,
voice.
Right? No, I liked... there's one movie that I liked that had Jane Smith in it. But that was because Will Smith was in it.
Was it that sci-fi movie they were in together?
No, that one was bad.
Okay.
Because that
I
was...
I didn't see that one.
That was Jane Smith starring in Will Smith as a supporting role.
Right. Which, and that was terrible.
Yeah, no, it didn't work. Yeah.
All right, so what was the good one?
The Pursuit of Happiness.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice movie.
Yeah. It was...
Not bad.
Sad.
Do you think maybe off camera Will Smith was like, get your acting game together, kid. And that's why it was good? Like, he needs Will on set to just give him kind of a little slap on the tush. Read your
that's
lines
what,
better.
That's actually what he's doing there. He's slapping his tush when he's doing that. It's right. not him slapping his hands together.
No, or his face.
Yeah.
Because that's child abuse.
That's right. Slapping yourself is child abuse?
No, slapping your kid is child abuse.
Okay.
Where do you...
Just checking. We don't have a child in here either, so...
I was not slapping a child! We're going to get to the music right now, and I'm gonna work out there. Maybe I'm going to slap Jefferson around. Is that co-host abuse?
Yes. Yes, it would be.
All right, then I won't. We'll be back.
This just in. Flash. Attention, Mr. and Mrs. America on all ships at sea. Nerd Radio is taking the country by storm.
This is Nerd Radio on Rift 2.
Hello, hello.
Hi, is this Chuck?
This is. Who's this?
It's John Linnell from They Might Be Giants calling.
Oh, my goodness. It's so good to hear from you, sir.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing this morning?
I'm well. I need my coffee.
Yeah, I bet. Have you just woken up?
Well, I woke up hours ago, but I'm you know, it's never too much coffee.
True enough. Do you have a favorite coffee?
I do. Well, it's a little embarrassing because it's not a gourmet coffee. It's this stuff that's I think made in New Jersey called Cafe Bustelo. It's
okay.
Kind of cheap supermarket espresso.
Well, hey, if it tastes good, if it's something you enjoy, then by all means, sir. And
right.
And the cheaper it is, the less money you have to spend getting a bunch of it.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic to hear from you, sir. A huge, huge fan of They Might Be Giants for years.
Yeah, thank you.
I say that with one caveat. I've literally never seen you guys live.
Well, and then I guess you have an opportunity coming up.
That's true enough. No Detroit dates this particular tour, but I saw that you guys do have a sold-out show at the Vic Theater in Chicago April the 17th. So
That's true.
That's kind of awesome. And you just announced... this morning it's April the 2nd, and I saw you announced two shows in Brooklyn on the 26th and the 31st, and we're getting a new album. That's kind of amazing.
We've been busy bees.
Yes, you have.
We've got a lot of new material, and only some of it is going into this new album's worth of stuff, which is called Glean.
Yep.
As you know, we've launched this year-long dial-a-song service where we have a new song every week.
Uh huh.
So that's a lot of material. That's 52 songs.
Absolutely.
And you know, we're trying to make it, you know, 52 good songs. That was the second line in the statement, the mission statement. You know, not just writing a pile of songs, but trying to keep the quality high. So I think we're doing as good a job as we can. And we started last year. We didn't start writing the first song on New Year's Day. We actually had a backlog of material. So we're uptight, basically. We're uptight, yes.
Well, that was something that, especially with Dial a Song and then a new album on top of it, is this going to be a bunch of absolutely new stuff, or is some of the stuff going to be from Dial a Song?
It is actually all from Dial a Song. It is a compilation of the first three months, January, February, March, mm-hmm. a little bit into 4 months of Dial a Songs. But we've kind of managed this whole project in a way where we knew this was going to be an album, so we were deliberately picking and choosing the best material to go on Dial a Song at the first third of the year, and then knowing that was going to be the material that would make up the album that we're putting out. We'll be putting out everything eventually, so it's all. I think it's top shelf material, frankly.
I would agree. Absolutely. I've been greatly entertained every week with the Dial a Song songs, and of course we've been playing them here on Nerd Radio on Riff 2 as we get them every week, which is super cool. Definitely. Love you guys. I also think it's really awesome you guys are doing this Dial a Song Direct thing where for $30 people can sign up and you'll get the Dial a Song songs every week directly to your email inbox. And then
right.
every other Friday or every couple of Fridays, you guys are doing a bunch of B-sides and stuff too. That go along with
we
it.
It's a big project, I don't know whether we're gonna fulfill all the obligations and then some, I guess, by the end of the year, but we might take a little break next year, the beginning of next year, we'll see.
I think it would be well deserved.
we are actually doing some shows, as you know. We're touring beginning in about a week, for 6 weeks or so this spring, and we are probably going to be out again in the fall. But one of the things about this project, the Dial a Song thing, is that we kind of saw it as a way to stay home a little bit more too, because we're really needing to spend a lot of time in the studio this year.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
Do you enjoy being in the studio more, or do you enjoy the live setting more?
I love traveling and I like visiting all these places, but it is really hard work. And of course we're really dedicated to making it a great show that everybody comes away thinking, we cared about it and everything. We're on duty when we're performing.
Absolutely.
So that makes it, it's work. And then there's, the personal difficulty of not, I hate this complaint because we have a great job,
I'm
not going to make it sound like, there's people who have really difficult lives and we don't, but
it is a hustle,
but I do, it's a hustle. And I do like being home. I like being with my family. And so that's a great incentive to stay home and write and record, as much as we can.
Absolutely. But They Might Be Giants, obviously you guys have been literally, to pardon the pun, been giants in the alternative rock community since early 80s. Going back to the live thing, do you guys hear about a lot of rock bands like Motley Crue or something like that. They get up to some crazy stuff when they go out on the road. What kind of absolutely insane stuff do the They Might Be Giants band when you're not on the stage?
I'm 55 years old. I mean, I don't think you'd be surprised. There's actually a great piece in The Onion many years ago about the Behind the Music episode about They Might Be Giants, which was not real. That was a fictitious article. But it basically was saying it was the lowest rated episode ever because there's nothing, really right. remarkable about our personal lives. I thought that was hilarious. I mean, they nailed it, basically. We save everything interesting for the music. the rest of it is, John and I have failed to become drug addicted or have any major personal crises. over the course of our professional lives. So,
well,
disappointing, I guess.
I'll tell you what, as a longtime fan, if you were going to fail at anything, I'm super happy that that's what you chose to fail at.
I suppose we've been lucky because we also haven't had any major crises. John and I still like each other.
Right.
You know, we've never had a major blow up between us. And this is 30 odd years into this. So, we're counting our blessings.
And you guys, a major thing right now, it seems like nowadays you get a lot of bands who are just two people. You get like the Black Keys, or you get Royal Blood's a new band from last year, something like that. You guys are almost like, you were ahead of the times. You were a two.
Oh, there have been duos going all the way back over the horizon. We didn't invent the duo. I mean, I would point to Gallagher and Sheen from the 1910s, I think. Show business has had lots of partnerships, and so we're just continuing in the tradition.
You guys have pioneered a lot of stuff. The first download only album, Long Tall Weekend, back in '99. You guys were right ahead of the curve with that. You guys did a bunch of children's albums, which was really cool. I always thought it was interesting that They Might Be Giants is a band that, like, as your fan base has grown up and now we have kids and maybe even grandkids, like, you can put a They Might Be Giants album and all ages can listen to a They Might Be Giants album and you don't have to worry about anything like that. Was that a conscious effort on your guys' part?
No, I think that was a lucky circumstance that allowed us to start doing kids' music. The suggestion came from, I think, somebody at Rounder Records that we put out a kids record, but I think it was based on this notion that we had been considered a band that was okay to play for your kids. You know, if you might have to do some explaining about the lyrics, but there was nothing as compared to, Marilyn Manson or something. We were considered okay for kids. So I think it was a simple transition. We do write songs for adults.
Oh, absolutely.
That's our main concern, I think, is, trying to come up with something that is
there's an
adult portion of music.
Sure, and there's absolutely, like you were saying, there's definitely songs for adults. There's definitely a segment of the crowd that totally gets something like XTC versus Adamant. That, you know, a younger generation is like, what are these guys singing? I mean, this is an entertaining song, but...
Yeah, it's not just to do with references. I think, one of the things we find, some of the things we find compelling in lyric writing is stuff that's deeply troubling and challenging, and that's a thing that, makes it interesting to put into a song, is because you're trying to address something that's hard to make sense out of any other way. So there's plenty of darkness and despair.
Oh, absolutely.
In the lyrics, but I think that we also want people to like it.
right. You want them to walk away going, well, like, that was a little depressing, but at the same time, I kind of enjoyed listening to it. So I'll definitely listen to it again. I definitely get that out of like the song Older. Like it's very, very much that's the thing that's going on. But then it's so catchy that I want to hear that again. That was kind of, I want to sing along to that. That's crazy. On a personal note, my first They Might Be Giants album was Apollo 18, and I really, going back to like a lot of firsts you guys would do, like that was the first CD I think I ever owned that I felt really took advantage of the CD format. Like putting it on shuffle was always an adventure.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of the shuffle thing was an afterthought. But yeah, there were, as you pointed out, there were tracks that were a few seconds long, and so you get a kind of a different experience if you put your machine into shuffle mode. That, I think that we sort of saw the technology as it was coming along, and thought about ways to use it. But I don't think we were necessarily anticipating anything. I mean, you were talking about the online album.
We
basically got a deal with E-Music in the 90s, and we made sure that it was set up in a way where we were not, we I don't think we were sticking our necks out that much. We just had a point where we were no longer on a major label. We thought, we could put out something as just a download-only exclusive, And that just seemed like an interesting conversation piece. It didn't, I don't think it was obvious to us that this was actually the way the music was going to go.
Right.
You know, I think it was more like this would be an interesting thing to try out. And we've had a lot of, we've really experimented a lot with all sorts of different ways of,
absolutely,
of putting stuff out, beginning with Dial Song, which was originally a phone machine with our songs on it in the early 1980s. So that, you know, I mean, I think we just felt like we tried to be open-minded about how to distribute what we were doing and how people could experience different ways of experiencing, and, you know, how we'd like to experience things differently. I think that was what was motivating us more than we don't know what's going to happen in the future, you know, ever. I mean, I think we're not very good at second guessing.
Sure.
Either the culture or the audience, but we've been lucky and we've tried to be flexible too. I think that's the main thing.
And it seems to me that, like, even when you do try something new, like the next album after Apollo 18 was your first with like a full backing band, at least on a personal note, and from the people that I know who are fans of They Might Be Giants, it's never been something that's totally turned off your fan base.
Well, I think some people were put off by when we got the band, you know, the people who had been with us for the previous 10 years kind of felt like we were becoming more like everything else. And we had to demonstrate that that was not the idea, and that was not what was happening, you know.
Yeah, and you guys, you
so
can,
that was a challenge, you know.
You can hear on John Henry and the subsequent albums, you know, later on, as you guys, you know, kind of put a band around you, that it's still They Might Be Giants. You guys still do, you know, these songs on the albums that are, like, even in my 30s, I'll hear a song from you guys and be educated about something that I had no idea about. You get a song like Mammals or, you know, about James K. Polk. And there's so many nuggets of history and you know, factoid in there that I, like, all of a sudden, because it's catchy, all of a sudden it's in my head. Now I know more about James K. Polk than, you know, I knew 5 years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, again, that's the kind of thing that we were identified with. And we wanted to make it clear that we were trying something out, but that was not, you know, I think we've probably always had this sort of neurotic fear of being pigeonholed in any way. So, and as we've gotten older, I think now we kind of feel like, well, people at least know what this is. You know, we don't have to make a big fuss to prove that we're one thing or another. We can just carry on doing the things that we are interested in. And so we're definitely more relaxed now about, you know, our first album had a sort of a, like, an H.A. Rey, Curious George looking kind of illustration of John and I.
Yep.
We're seated on the back of a large dog, and, you know, it's very fun and very beautiful album cover by this artist, Rodney Allen Greenblatt. Tower Records, when they unpacked it, they put it in their children's music section because that's what the album looked like. And then over time, I think we kind of realized, oh, we could actually do a kid's record at this point, and it wouldn't confuse anybody.
Right.
They wouldn't think, oh, they're a kid's group, or whatever it is we were doing, we've established ourselves, at least in our own minds. We kind of feel like we know what we're doing, and we're not nervous about being misidentified anymore. You know, after 30 whatever years, you know, I think we kind of feel like comfortable in our own skin enough to experiment with how we're perceived.
It's funny that you mentioned Tower Records. I remember there was a local chain here in Michigan. I think it might have been nationwide, called Harmony House. And I remember going to Harmony House when I was in high school and looking through the cassettes, and I would see that I would see Miscellaneous Tea, and they always had a copy of, I think, Lincoln. And then right above it was another band called They Eat Their Own. And I remember as a teenager being very confused about, like I would, every time I would go and I'd look at those and I'd be like, oh, I want to buy one of these. I would pick up They Eat Their Own along with it. And I'd be like, no, wait, that's not the same guys. This doesn't even look like the same band.
It's confusing, you know. Well, we were traditionally, my memory is we were traditionally next door to 38 Special and I felt like that was a nice.
I always I joke that a lot of the rock stations will do mandatory Metallica and mandatory Motley Crue or something like that. So like if you're gonna name a band, definitely start it with an M, so that if you make it, you'll be mandatory somewhere.
You'll at least be in that section, yeah.
Right, totally. We almost have it like a mandatory They Might Be Giants now, thanks to Dial-A-Song. You guys have brought back the phone machine as well?
We have, and there's a number you can call, which I haven't memorized it.
I think I've got it here. I've got the page of
okay.
844-387-6962.
That's right, yeah. We've changed the exchange, but the last seven digits are the same as the original Dial-A-Song going back to 1983, and it's a regular phone call, and it's the same old thing. You call it up and you listen to one of our songs.
And it's definitely great that you guys have brought it back. Before I let you go, I'd just like to know, like, what was the impetus of like, okay, we're gonna do Dial-A-Song in 2015?
I think we realized that. I mean, this is my explanation, which is that there's something about Dial-A-Song which is at the heart of our philosophy. You know, that the original concept of the band, if there is one, is that we are directly aimed at the audience. You know, there isn't an intermediary. And that was part of the idea of Dial-A-Song, was that you could be home and pick up the phone and call us, as opposed to going through the record store, you know, any of the other sort of ways that you consume music where you feel like there's an organization that has to be navigated. I think we kind of felt like we wanted to have a more direct connection to the audience. And I think that's still the case. We kind of feel like what people like about us is that we are their band. You know, we are, there's something very personal about
absolutely
people's part of their relationship to us. And that's something we want to hold on to. You know, I think that was something people liked in the first place.
Well, it's been absolutely amazing to talk to you, John. Like I said, I've been a big fan of you guys, and hopefully when you guys tour in the fall, you come out to Detroit, we'll get a chance to see you.
We'll be sort of in the area, but we will come back and play somewhere closer to you. You know, if we're not in Ann Arbor or someplace, maybe.
Oh yeah, totally. There's some great places to play in Ann Arbor.
Right. So yeah, one of them. We'll be around. Don't worry.
Excellent. Well, it's John Linnell from They Might Be Giants here on Nerd Radio on Riff 2. New album, Glean, coming out in about 4 weeks, April 21st, their 17th studio album. And of course, you can check out Dial-A-Song at dialasong.com. And you can sign up for the Dial-A-Song Network. You can get the songs. You get basically 2 to 3 albums worth of music for about $30, including a whole bunch
of
B-sides. And I really, your B-sides are some of my favorite songs.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I've got, I was just looking last night through my CD collection. I've got like the singles for the guitar and I Palindrome I and stuff. And like Welcome to the Jungle is fantastic. I love Mrs. Train. Super mm-hmm. cool. And even going back to like the first album, stuff like, oh man, I'm having a problem just...
You're going deep.
I am absolutely
deep catalog.
Yeah, I really enjoy that stuff, and I'm
very
glad
good.
To see you guys are still making music and still the same band, still very cool.
Thank you so much. Nice speaking with you.
Absolutely. Take care, John.
You too. Bye bye now.
Bye bye.
I'm Tony Maiello, and you're listening to Nerd Radio on Riff 2.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going.
Where was I?
It is Wednesday night. You're listening to Nerd Radio on Riff 2. Chuck being in the studio with you. Jefferson, not here with me, but in his place, I have a very special guest, Monica, who works here at the station.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
I'm good. We talked, it was like 4 months ago now.
Yep.
We had the station Christmas party.
Yep.
And,
you found out a secret.
Yeah. You were like, you do nerd stuff. I'm like, hell yeah, I do nerd stuff. And you're like, we gotta talk.
Cause I do nerd stuff.
Right. You're all about playing the online tabletop gaming stuff.
Yes. I do the tabletop role playing game.
Yes. Yeah. Now what, we talked a couple weeks ago with, Jefferson's, DM. He's just started on the world of playing tabletop games. He's playing something that's very Dungeons and Dragons like, but he's playing like an archer, and he was all about like, dude, I rolled a natural 20 and I totally took out this thing of goblins. It was amazing.
It's amazing. You feel so powerful when you're doing it.
It is really super fun.
It is.
So what games are you do you play?
Currently, we just started my group started a campaign of Necessary Evil.
Okay. Is that the name of the actual
That is the name of the actual game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it D20 system?
It is, we roll D6s. Well, not really. It's hard to explain.
So
you buy up your die types, basically.
So more like, I would say like Shadowrun or like Vampire, where Vampire uses D10s.
Yeah.
You get dots and stuff. This is D6s, which is
And then you can buy your die Shadowrun. Types up from there. So, you know,
yeah,
I
once
could
you
be
get
rolling
enough-
D12s. But right now I'm
interesting. And what's the theme of the Necessary Evil game?
Super villains.
Oh, all right. Is it modern day?
It's modern day. An alien race has taken over the world.
Okay.
Killed all the superheroes. So the supervillains have to rise up and save the planet because it's our planet, not the aliens' planet.
Okay.
And we want to terrorize it. We don't want other people terrorizing it.
Right.
So.
You know, it's all for us to...
Exactly. This like is my planet.
They did the heavy lifting of removing the superheroes, but
right.
now you have to remove them.
Right. Now I have to remove them so I can have all the fun.
Interesting. How long has this game been out?
You know, I don't know. I started playing it last summer.
Okay.
And then we kind of took a little break. Over the winter, we played a vampire game, and now we just got back into our second campaign of this. So I'm not really sure how long it's been out.
Okay, so it's at least a year. Because I was going to say it was last year. I think there was a DC Comics crossover called Forever Evil that's somewhat similar in that like all the Justice League like disappeared,
right?
And there was an evil Justice League in their place, and like Lex Luthor and Captain Cold and like all the villains were like, this will not do. Superman is now a huge jerk and thinks he's going to take over the planet. And, like, I can deal with the Superman who's a goody two shoes. I can't deal with this guy. We
right.
need to figure
you
something out.
You can't have
out.
A good, evil Superman.
Right. So it's interesting that there's a full on tabletop game.
Yes.
That's very much this particular concept. How big a group do you play with?
It varies in size. There's always at least four of us.
Okay.
Four is a good number.
A good number.
You know, it doesn't get too crowded or crazy, and some of us don't get ignored as much. But I mean, there'll be nights when there's like eight or nine of us. Yeah. But I mean, once we get back into the summer, our group might get a little bit bigger, but
right.
We
as
wanted
people,
to come out and play in the winter.
Well, and it's funny how that works. Like sometimes similarly when summer rolls around, like all of a sudden, depending on when you play, you know, if it's like a weekend or something like that, suddenly everybody's got stuff to do, man.
Right.
Everybody wants to go out and be out in the nice weather and everything
right.
like that. Where was I going with that? What kind of character are you playing?
I am a delusional, shape-shifting copycat. So she's a lot of fun to play. Like, a lot of fun.
That's cool. Is she like, kind of, because you said she's a shape-shifter,
yeah.
She kind of like, does she know what her actual... face is, or is that part of the delusion that
no,
she just
I,
like can't?
You know, I haven't really decided yet because we've only been playing this one a week.
Okay,
so she's still developing. But
absolutely,
she probably knows what she really looks like.
It's really fun how that works too when you're doing like either tabletopping or like I've done the vampire game that you're talking about before, Vampire the Masquerade. I played some modern day years ago on a chat room site, and it was very cool in that I enjoyed the chat room site almost more than tabletopping because in tabletopping you have the DM or the game master, or whatever like that. And he's kind of setting the story
setting
for
it
you.
Up,
and,
right.
and yeah, he's kind of like, he's, I don't want to say he's fencing you in, but you know, he knows where he wants you to go
right.
kind of thing. And in the chat room, it was really fun because you had to be somewhat your own DM and at the same time, your own character. So it was almost like cooperative writing. Like I would type out a post about what my character's doing and then wait for you to type the post about what your character's doing in
right.
response to that. And you would just go back and forth like that and have conversations and stuff like that.
Right.
And it was super fun.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Well, it has the potential to be fun. I'm sure.
You got to get the right kind of people though for that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I talked to Mike, his name, Jefferson's DM about this too. You get different player types
right.
when you're playing in tabletop. And sometimes you need that DM to rein in people because you
we
know,
can get a little just, crazy.
Yeah, there's guys that know the rule book forwards and backwards, mm-hmm. and they know mathematically how to make the character that like nobody can beat anyways, and you got to deal with that guy. And there's the guy that, you know, like the DM has a story and he wants to get from point A to point B, and there's the guy that will totally turn left because he wants the thing to be all about him.
Right. I'm going to bend the rules and do it my way.
Right.
Yes.
So you
I've played with people like that before.
Exactly. See, you can bring up those kind of stereotypes and people are like, yep, played with that guy.
Played with
know
that
guy.
Yep. Yep.
Totally know that guy.
Yep. Know that person.
So what, so far, like what plot wise, what have you guys, like what's the rest of your group? You've got the shapeshifter.
I'm the shapeshifter. We have, a guy who kind of like hulks out.
Okay.
So he's got two characters. He's got like his normal pacifist character.
Right.
And then he's got his angry giant green character.
Sure.
And, gosh, now you put me on the spot. I can't remember what anybody else is.
So busy developing your shapeshifter. What have you named her?
Her name is Bella.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
Yep. Her name is Bella. Yep. And she's got a fun little quirky habit, which makes her a lot of fun to play.
Okay.
Is she will, every time she has to go into battle, she has to take a shot. So she's always got a flask.
On her.
Yep. And so that kind of plays into her delusion.
Have you figured out what the reasoning behind that is? Like, why does she have to take a shot? Is it, like, bravery? She needs a little liquid courage?
I don't know. I think it's just because she's that crazy. Like, I think she's just going to become that crazy.
Yeah.
And that's easy to play, too, because I can pretty much just, you know, go off and say the crazy things and do the crazy things.
You know, there's going to be an intervention session.
There's going to be an intervention. Or I'm going to go into battle and it's going to be really bad because I'm not going to be tolerant for anything.
I was
going to
say, does your DM make you like, you know, depending on how drunk your character might be, is like you get negatives to doing stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, I will. I will. That's what he said. He even said that to me the other day. He goes, I can't wait till we get into an actual battle scene until your character gets tolerance because you are going to have so many negatives against you. And I'm like, this is not fun. You should have talked to me about this before
You're
I made
be
my character.
Beating up a fire hydrant while everybody else is doing stuff. Right. I'll show you. Son of a bitch.
Jerk.
Ridiculous
Gone
stuff.
Away.
You were telling me off the air, we were talking briefly about this, that you, when you played in the summer, you had a different character.
I did have a different character.
What was she like?
She was based off of Xena. That's how they reeled me into the tabletop games.
Yeah.
I was introduced to this the group of people that I play with by a mutual friend.
Yep.
And he was like, you're going to love this. He's like, it's right up your alley. And, you know, I went to one game, sat in on it, watched them play. I was like, this actually looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll play. And they were like, come back, play with us next week. And I said, here's the deal. Make me a Xena character and I'll come back and play. I didn't think they were going to do it. I literally got a phone call a couple days later going, you're going to be here next Monday because we made a Xena character. So come back and play. And she was a blast to play.
Awesome.
I'm a huge Xena fan. So it was super fun to play her. I even had her chakram. I threw it.
Oh, nice.
Came back to me. It was a lot of fun.
It's funny that you basically got into playing the tabletop games because of Xena.
Yes.
When I was in high school is when the show was on the air, when the Xena show was like second, third season or whatever like that, and we would play on a Saturday night, which was when the syndication would play Hercules and Xena.
Right.
And I would literally, we'd be sitting and around the table or something, we'd be playing or something like that, and I'd look at the clock and it'd be like 8 o'clock. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to be over by the TV for the next, like, if you guys need me,
that's cool.
But for the next 2 hours, I want to see the show because it's kind of cool. And it was like ambience.
Right.
It was like,
no, it's great.
And it was directed by Sam Raimi from Evil Dead. And it's so slapstick and off the wall and so much fun.
Such a great little fantasy, fun
Such
world.
Such a fun show.
And the way they jump around, like one minute she's fighting Goliath and the next day she's pretending to be Cleopatra. Like, it's great.
Yeah, exactly. They put the Romans in there and there was the different gods, the god of war, Ares and Aphrodite and stuff like that. It was super, super fun show.
Super fun fantasy world to put around that.
You said you played the vampire game as well.
Yes, we did.
We're talking Vampire the Masquerade, I would imagine?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Do you know which version of Vampire? Because there was like the Vampire the Masquerade, and then a couple years ago they rebooted it and called the Requiem, Vampire the Requiem, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think it was that one.
So it was like the original,
Vampire
the Masquerade stuff. Oh, we could talk some vampire.
Although my vampire character developed in a very strange way. I I was not intending to go this route with her.
Sure.
And it's a little embarrassing. Like, this was not the direction she was supposed to go. And it worked out kind of nicely because I was the richest character in our group.
Okay. You, so like, that, Daddy Warbucks? You, like, bankrolling the rest of the rest of the group?
I was, like, bankrolling. Like, I was building harbors and stuff. Like,
you were...
The one guy in our group who was the king of the land kept having to come to me for loans. Like, it was great.
You were the Tony Stark of, the, of Vampire
yeah,
Masquerade.
Except I don't think Tony Stark ever did anything that raunchy. Let's just put it that way.
So she was very physical.
She was the owner of a very physical
establishment.
All right. Let's just put it that way.
I get it. All right. No, I mean that's really one of the things you said there that is really kind of fun. It happens more frequently, I found, in the vampire game than in, like, say, Dungeons and Dragons stuff, but it happens across all tabletoping is, like you said about your shapeshifter character, yeah. Like, you've only played her for a week. You don't really know her yet.
Yeah.
Like, the characters develop almost out from under you.
Yeah.
And sometimes they turn into characters that, like, you literally hit points where you're like, okay, I would do this, but I'm pretty sure she would do that. And you kind of have to, there's been a handful of video games in the last, I'd say, like, decade, too, that are really good about that, where, like, the Mass Effect video games, I remember very clearly playing and hitting certain points and, like, having to stop and stare at the screen for a minute, because I would totally take choice A, but the character I've been playing for the last hour would totally not do that.
Right. And it was really fun with the vampire game, because it was a lot like that, because, you know, I didn't care about... you know, humans or, you know, whatever. They were there for my benefit.
Yeah.
You know, so Monica, me, it was like, aw. But
yeah,
vampire,
like, I wouldn't do that.
Vampire version was like, I don't care.
Nope.
And so it's kind of, you know, fun to play that opposite.
It sounds like your group plays a lot of those kind of games where it's like the almost a Grand Theft Auto mentality of, like, I would not do this in real life, but, like, I'm going to have a great time imagining a character that totally...
We always tend to be bad guys. It's very strange.
Well, I'll tell you, that's for the D&D groups I've played with, that's par for the course.
Yeah.
Almost every Dungeons and Dragons group I've ever played with devolves into, in order to save the village, we had to burn the village.
Right.
Like, you start off and you really want to be good guys. You get a paladin or something like that.
You really want.
You're like, we're going to slay the dragon and save the princess and everything's going to be great. And then, like, eventually it just goes off the rails.
Which is exactly how the vampire game started out. We were you know, a group of brujas, like, all in it together.
Sure.
And then by the end of the game, we literally killed each other.
Which, vampire is unique in that you can literally, like, that's, I played a Dark Ages vampire, which is, you know, like, D&D fantasy setting times. Where we also, like, we had different clans going in, which is always, like, that's the first problem when it comes to playing a vampire. There's the different blood clans, which have different abilities, but they all don't get along very well.
Yeah.
So there's a politics game that's going on with that. And eventually, especially when you're playing with people, if you don't set hard rules to stop them from actually rolling dice against each other and fighting, most campaigns end with a giant,
one guy
decides, I've had enough of this guy and I'm gonna attack him, and then all of a sudden alliances start coming in play. It's like at the end game of, like, Monopoly.
Yes.
Where, like,
just,
you know,
people are turning against each other.
Yeah, there's, like, one guy who's clearly winning, and then there's an underdog, but that's, like, kind of in second place, and then there's, like, the two guys that are like, have no chance, but, like, one of them will throw in with the underdog just to, like, prop him up to try and
exactly.
I don't know if you've gotten to experience a couple of years ago when they launched Vampire the Requiem, they launched a board game that's called Vampire King of the City, and it is nothing but, like, it is literally like Vampire Monopoly. You have a city of these little hexagon squares.
That is fantastic.
And you have, like, five different clan guys, and it's Monopoly. Like, you start by building your power base. And then eventually taking a little bit here and a little bit here, because the city's only so big. So once everybody's got every property, then you start, like, almost like Risk. You almost start, like, taking away property from people.
That's, like, way more hardcore than normal Monopoly.
Oh, it's so good, though. It's so good. I haven't played it in forever. You guys should totally check it out.
I'm going to check that out and find it.
It's a super, super fun game.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, once you played a couple of things, once your character's
developed a little more,
you have to come back and tell us more about
her. For sure.
Absolutely. What was her name again? Bella.
Bella, yes.
Madam
Bella.
Madam Bella. Does your group have like a supervillain group name yet?
The Undesirables.
That's so good. It's so good. God.
It's good.
That's a great supervillain name. This is great. I'm surprised that's not already taken.
Right. We might start a whole new thing.
That's amazing. All right. Well, we'll certainly have you back. Thanks for coming in, Mo.
Oh, of course. It was awesome.
And we'll talk to you again real soon.
I'm in a difficult situation here. I mean, after all, you're nerds.
I'm a vampire! You've been listening to the Nerd Radio on Riff 2 podcast. Each week, our podcast can be found on our website, wrif.com/riff2, RIFF2. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/riff2nerds. It's RIFF2nerds, NERDS. And you can find us on Twitter as well at riff2nerds. Listen to Nerd Radio on Riff 2 every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. And thank you for listening to our Nerd Radio on Riff 2 podcast.